You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
The American League West and the National League West are shaping up to be very interesting. In the AL West, you have the Seattle Mariners at the top of the division. And in the NL West, it's really anybody's guess who's going to pull away from this. I am Allison Footer from MLB.com, and we caught up with the reporters who cover all of these teams. So let's hear what they have to say.
Ken, a very average month for just about everybody in that division, including the Dodgers. And you have an interesting piece just on their upcoming schedule. Do you feel like they're going to be tested a little bit to see just what kind of team they have? Because they have a lot of non-divisional games coming up. So what might that be able to tell us?
Well, I think it'll tell us a lot about their division because, as you said, the division was hard to pick one over the other. They all wound up under 500 for the month, and nobody stood out. Dodgers went into a horrible offensive slump on their homestand and almost got swept, lost six in a row. So they're now going to be playing out of the division and going to be playing quite a few playoff teams between now and, say, the first week of June. So we'll have a much better idea how they stack up against the rest of the league.
I guess they have to feel, I mean, in this kind of situation, like you said, with the offense, I mean, all the notes that I've made, it all has to do with offensive issues. And I guess that's when they have to feel like these things are temporary. It's very hard to, especially this Dodgers lineup, while it's not perfect by any stretch, but it's deep and they've got some good hitters. They have to probably feel pretty good that this isn't going to be like a long-lasting kind of thing.
Well, I mean, you never know. They've had a lot of injuries, and that's part of it. You know, they haven't had Epier. They haven't had Van Slyke. Crawford came back and hasn't been hitting. Turner's coming off knee surgery, and he's not hitting. Adrian Gonzalez went into a slump at home. They've got a lot of problems offensively. And, you know, in truth, when they came into the season, while they have, you know, some talent, they need more things to go right than wrong, like most teams. They're not overloaded with talent that they can overcome a lot of problems, particularly the injuries. But you add a slump onto the injuries, and you got a six-game losing streak. So, you know, they're going to have to do a better job driving in runs, leaving too many runners on base, and they've got too many guys slumping. So, you know, they've been fortunate that they're in a division with a lot of teams that have a lot of similar problems. So nobody's been able to put any distance between first and second place.
Yeah, I think the most glaring slump is probably Yasiel Puig. I remember talking to you in the first couple of weeks of the season about how it looked like he was, you know, off to a really good start. He was hitting 400 in the first 2 weeks. It seemed like maybe Dave Roberts was a positive influence on him. And then since April 15th, so it's not even like it's a short amount of time. I mean, it's a little bit over 2 weeks. He's got a 137, 154, 235 slash line. So I know he got a day off this week, and then the Dodgers have this odd schedule of like two off days in 1 week. So I guess that was kind of just a ploy to maybe clear his head a little bit. Do you see him losing playing time moving forward?
Well, he can still help you defensively, and I don't think that they expect you know, him to hit 200 all year. But, you know, he has shown over the years that he can be pitched to, you know, and he does chase bad pitches. And until he gets the discipline, when pitchers make the adjustments, he needs to be able to adjust back. And he's streaky, as a lot of hitters are, and he was in a good streak early on. But once they found some holes and began to exploit, he's not able to make the adjustments, and he hasn't in past years either. So you know, he's kind of a boom or bust type player. But like I said, he can help you defensively. He, you know, his arm has to be reckoned with, so he can cut down the opponent's running game. He still can do some things to help you. And so as far as getting benched, I think it would have to get worse for that to happen. And really, they don't have great alternatives. So their bench, especially in the outfield with Epier and Van Slyke on the DL, there just aren't that many good options. So I would imagine he's going to stay in the starting lineup unless this continues.
So, Chris, Johnny Cueto, you know, these are always fun things. they returned to the ballpark where they spent the majority of their career before they, bolted either by a trade or free agency. And so I was kind of looking forward to seeing the results, and I'm trying to now figure out what I think of these results. So let's start at the beginning. Like, what kind of reception did he get first, initially, when he went out to the mound?
It was a very warm reception, Allison. He got a nice ovation, not a big, huge standing ovation, although I thought maybe I would have liked to have seen him, frankly, acknowledge the ovation. I always think it's really cool when an athlete acknowledges that sort of thing. And I don't think he didn't acknowledge it because he was being a jerk or anything. I think he was just, kind of focused and wanted to stay professional about the whole thing. But he got a nice ovation before while he was taking his warm-ups before the bottom of the first inning. And then again when he went to hit his first time at bat. You can tell the Cincinnati fans truly appreciated him. And he did say, verbally afterward, and he mentioned this to the Giants writers, in the days before, leading up to this appearance, that, yes, he does appreciate the Cincinnati fans too. So, it was just a nice thing all around.
Yeah, we have to remember that even though the Reds are in a very tough stretch, it's not going to be just a one-season thing, too. They're going to be, they've not been good, and they're going to continue to not be good for a while. But just a few years ago, they were perennial playoff contenders, and they were in the playoffs, and they were expected to go far into the playoffs. And Johnny Cueto was a number one reason why all of that was working on the pitching side. So there wouldn't be any reason, really, for Reds fans to not greet him warmly, right?
Oh, this is true. Yeah, that's true. As Joey Votto said, a lot of positive memories, good memories. I think, for the players, of course, a lot of them are off the mound, or off the field, because Johnny's a pretty jovial guy. We haven't really totally seen that side yet in San Francisco, but I think once he loosens up, we will. But the Reds players, saw him at his best, both as a pitcher and as a person. So, I think the respect and admiration and affection is mutual.
Yeah, okay, so let's talk about the performance. Not really very good. He gave up a lot of runs. Of course, the Giants won the game, so none of that matters, but he definitely didn't seem to be at his sharpest early on in this game.
Yeah, that big third inning, I guess it was, made a huge difference, and he just kind of lost it there for the one inning, but then he came back strong and finished up very nicely.
Yeah, is that kind of, I mean, what are your impressions of him just overall, just so far, what you've seen of him through the early stages of the regular season? Because that, what you just said is pretty much a lot of what's been said about Johnny Cueto all the time, not just this season, but just like, well, he kind of lost it a little bit there, and then he got it back, and he kind of bared down and was able to stay in the game. I guess that's sort of his MO, huh?
Yes. You know what they say, if we want the starter to keep us close, and he did keep them close. He allowed the six runs, but then he shut them down his final two innings, left after five innings, with the Giants trailing 6-3. But the Reds could have, stretched it out a little bit, and if they had, that might have been too much for the Giants to overcome. But as it was, the Giants overcame that deficit and ended up winning the game. So you can say that Cueto did his job. He kept the team close.
It's always those are always possibilities, especially when you're playing a team that's not very good. So, okay, enough dumping on the Reds. Let's move on to Tim Lincecum. So this is big news, not big news, but everyone's talking about it. He's going to have a showcase on Friday in Scottsdale for teams that may want to sign him. So he is working his way back after having an injury to his hip and a surgery on his hip. And so my question for you, of course the Giants will be one of the teams that will be watching him. Do they have an edge, an advantage, if they do want him because of the comfort level that Tim has with the organization, or is it just going to come down to what his role can be and what somebody wants to pay him?
Good question. I'd say a little bit of both. I think the Giants do have an edge. I think he'd like to come back there. I mean, this wasn't really highly publicized, but he visited the team a couple times. It was after hours, so to speak. They made sure all the media was gone. But he visited the clubhouse a few times during spring training. So, I mean, his attachment to the Giants is still kind of there, if you know what I mean. And then, I think there are a few, not a whole, I don't know how many other teams would want to take a chance on him, frankly, but the Giants are one of those teams. He could fit in, you know, with them needing a long reliever. You know, once he worked himself into shape a little more, maybe he could handle that long relief role, and or, you know, be a spot starter or even a full-time spot starter, you know, as a fourth or fifth starter if things happen to either, you know, Jake Peavy or Matt Cain.
Yeah, and that's like something that they really do need to consider. I mean, you have to, you don't really, I mean, you do. You sort of plan for injuries or inconsistencies. You have plan B, plan C. He would certainly fit that bill, especially, I mean, this Matt Cain thing is getting really disconcerting. I can imagine that it's just sort of dreadful to have to watch this thing unfold because he's really struggling, and that's got to be tough.
It's something he's not used to. They're looking for, you know, I think I may use the term last week, incremental improvement, and that's, you know, that's what they're looking for right now. Bruce Bochy says he's going to stick with both Jake Peavy and Matt Cain, you know, for the foreseeable future. He didn't even say foreseeable future. He just says he's going to stick with those two, and he believes that they're going to be, you know, winners and contributors, more importantly, to this to a team that reaches the postseason. And so he's going to stick by that that conviction for a while.
Okay, and let's end this with just going over some injury news, some call-ups. So, okay, Angel Pagan, he has a little strain, a grade 1 strain in his left hamstring that he had while running the bases. So, but he's only going to be out a few days. So instead of DLing him, having to replace him position-wise, they're just kind of putting – Mac Williamson. So he comes up and I guess is just a reinforcement in the short term.
Yes, he's going to have to rest, though. So you know, his whole game is his speed. That's just it, and that's what made the difference this year. And of course, with the hitting, you know, people don't realize you need your lower half. You need your lower half to hit. You hit as much with your legs as you do with your arms. And that's why he had a problem last year. He's pulling off the ball because his knees hurt so much. And this year, he's with his knees healthy, he was hitting 310, 315, 320. So they have to get him healthy. That's step one.
Yeah, and that seems to be, I mean, that's sort of the, we talk a lot about Angel Pagan trying to stay healthy, so that's nothing really new for the team. So anyway, okay, Chris, thank you so much. We will catch up with you next week. Appreciate it. AJ, Drew Pomeranz. So he is, he took a kind of a rough loss. But it's almost like a badge of honor. So he loses, the Padres lose 1-0 to Clayton Kershaw. So he's got that, I don't know, is that like a feather in his cap a little bit that like he was kind of the hard luck loser, but it's got to be some prestige in that, no?
Yeah, he did himself, he looked really good against Clayton Kershaw, and that says something about him. I think there are a lot of pitchers who kind of maybe when they give up that first run, which was the only run he gave up was a single by Clayton Kershaw, was kind of wilt. He went 7 innings, and he probably could have gone 8 to pick up a complete game. He's been so good for the Padres, and I think he kind of went toe-to-toe with Clayton Kershaw. He didn't get the win. Kershaw was a little better, but Kershaw is pretty much a little better than every pitcher in baseball. So
right. It
says something about how far Drew Pomeranz has come in the first month of the season.
Yeah, 2.48 ERA through 5 starts. So we're talking about, yes, the proverbial small sample size. But still, I mean, really, to have that kind of start and for the Padres overall, I mean, they recently took 2 of 3 from a very, very much struggling Dodgers team. But that being their only loss in that series, that had to have given them some kind of psychological lift.
Yeah, and with Drew Pomeranz, the thing, the small sample size, I mean, obviously you always have to be cautious with small sample sizes. But if you can look at a small sample size and say, hey, this is why he's pitching so well in a small sample size and there's a reason to think it'll continue, well, his curveball has been fantastic. It's been one of the best I've seen. Clayton Kershaw himself said it was one of the best curveballs he'd seen, and that's obviously high praise coming from someone with maybe the best curveball in baseball. And the fact that he's kind of mixing, he added a cutter during the offseason, which he kind of just found by accident. You hear all these stories about guys finding cutters by accident. That was the same thing with Drew Pomeranz. So he's got a mix of pitches that he can use as a starter because he was in the bullpen before and it was pretty much just fastball, curveball then. He's got a mix of pitches. He's got an out pitch, one of the better out pitches in the division, and he's also clearly capable of throwing 100, 110 pitches. He never really got that chance in Colorado, and now he has, and he's doing well. I think the Padres, the series over the weekend, the Padres were very pleased with. I mean, if you say you're going to take 2 out of 3 and your only loss is going to be because Clayton Kershaw, which is an absolute gem, I think they would have taken that 10 times out of 10.
Yeah, I mean, the Padres are obviously in a time of evaluation and trying to figure out, you know, where they are going to be in the near future and in the kind of distant future. But they have to have these building blocks in order to get anything figured out. That brings me really to James Shields. So now we have a veteran guy, and he's getting very little run support. And we're going to be saying that about most of the pitchers, most of the pitchers this season when it comes to the Padres. Let's face it, that lineup is not going to give him a whole lot. But he had a nice outing, and the Padres won a 2-1 game against the Rockies. But the lack of run support, I would imagine that being a veteran, that he's able to handle that a little bit better because it's been sort of game after game after game. He's got to deal with that. And I would think that he probably is able to process that a little bit better than if it was happening to, like, a young guy trying to establish himself.
Yeah, he actually said that after his last loss. His last loss was probably the worst one. It was a 1-0 loss, kind of like Pomerantz's on Sunday. He was basically, we asked him about the run support and if it got frustrating. He said, "No, not really. I've been doing this long enough to know I can control the things I can control, and I can't control what I can't control." So, last night the Padres got him 2 runs right off the bat. Didn't give him another run the rest of the game, but he's been around long enough, and he's got the right mindset for it too. He's intensely focused on what he has to do, and if the rest of the things fall into place, then they fall into place. If they don't, they don't. But if he does his job, he knows that that's his responsibility. It doesn't go much farther than that.
Yeah, looking at the division, are you surprised at all that until maybe yesterday, like, the entire division was under 500? I mean, I don't know if that means everyone's really bad or everyone's kind of canceling each other out because they're, like, kind of the same team, but it's got to be a little surprising a month into the season to see the Giants and the Dodgers, like, really not doing much.
Yeah, and the biggest thing I think with the division is that we've learned in the first month, because I don't think it's not going to stay this way. So at least one of the teams is going to kind of either pull away or put a few games between themselves and 500. But what we've seen, and the Padres have now played everyone in the division at least once, is that every single team has at least one flaw, and in some cases several. So there's no perfect team in the division. At the end, I'm not all that surprised that these teams are kind of off to these slower starts, because every single team here has something that has issues that they either need to clear up through the deadline, maybe through getting healthy, and I think that'll go a long way to determining who wins it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating division. So, AJ, thank you so much, and we will talk to you next week. Thank you. Okay, so a game under 500 is not like. I mean, it depends on what team you're talking about. Of course, if it was the Dodgers, they'd be like, the sky is falling and everyone needs to go hide. But with the Rockies, I like this because they are hanging in there in a really mediocre division, but they're also getting some good performances from people that they need good performances from. And one of those is Tyler Chatwood. So you cannot ignore the streak that he's on and what he's been able to do after almost like 2 full years out of the game. So tell us about what's going on with him.
Well, what's going on with him is he's kind of returned to what the Angels thought he was when they made him a high draft pick. I mean, a guy who can get you deep in the games and just a tough fellow. I mean, he's one of those short right-handers that everybody says can't make it, but he's doing it. He's throwing a very good fastball, staying low in the zone, throwing a cutter instead of a slider, which was, I think, the pitch that put a lot of stress on his elbows. And it's just, he's the type of pitcher the Rockies need, and that a lot is going well for him, especially on the road. But he's the type of individual where if things go wrong, like, say, there's a high-scoring home game, he still keeps his team in the game. So people are really reacting to him. I mean, the guys behind him or the day he's going to pitch, there's just a little bit of extra confidence on that team. They really needed that from him.
Yeah, he's got one in his road innings, so 27 in the third road innings, he's allowed one earned run, and he has a scoreless streak during that time of 24 and two-thirds innings. It's not, I mean, at home it's decent, right? I know it's not like this. It's not like this is a Coors Field thing and nothing else.
Right. It's, you know, and if you look at his record over the years, or the 3 years he's pitched at Coors Field, he's done pretty well. He's done as well as any other right-hander. And if you extrapolate it out, we're talking he could be one of the best right-handers to ever pitch at Coors Field. So, no, I don't think this is a problem where this guy can't pitch at home.
Okay, good, because I would like to see some pitchers do well for the Rockies. That would be that's a good first step. So, moving to the offensive side, no, I don't want to talk about Trevor Story just right this second, but Nolan Arenado, who is one of our writers, Mike Petriello, says he's like our StatCast guru, and he knows how to break it down really in ways that none of us really can. So there's a really nice story on the Rockies website. And Arenado is slugging .651, and he is swinging at fewer pitches outside the zone this year than any other time in the last 4 years. So you already have this great player who now seems to even be more disciplined. Is the sky the limit for him?
No, no doubt about it. I mean, this is a guy who... And when you look at it, I think some people look at numbers and they look at the fact that he hasn't walked and figure, gee, he'll never walk. I mean, but this is a guy who came into the major leagues at a very young age, so you have to allow for some improvement there. And what I like is the way that he's done it, is that he's done it by swinging aggressively and he learns as he goes. I know we're not talking about him, but what he's doing now is kind of where Trevor Story could be headed. He hasn't come up here saying, I'm going to avoid strikeouts. Just, I need to crush some balls. And as he's doing it, he figures out which ones he needs to crush and which ones he needs to lay off of. And that, you've seen a gradual improvement in that area with Nolan Arenado over the years, which will make him even better because pitchers, right now, he's scaring them out of coming into the strike zone. And if they go outside the strike zone and can't get them out, end up walking them, that makes them even more dangerous because eventually you do have to come in and pitch into them.
Okay, so, of course, I was just kidding that I'm not going to bring up Trevor Story. Of course I'm going to bring up Trevor Story.
I know.
But you, the thing that sticks out to me is of the rookies who nobody heard of who came and burst out that first week of the season, it was like insane. Trevor Story is the only one who's really still doing what he was doing earlier in April. So his rookie of the month, that's no big shock. But it seems like we need to start looking at this as like something that could maybe extend moderately over the course of the season, right?
Yeah, I think so. And there are a couple of keys to it. Number one is the maturity, having taken a while to get to the major leagues. I think that's huge because he can handle ups and downs. There have been some tough periods and there have been a lot of strikeouts, but you haven't seen that affect him. And I think the other one, and some people are questioning this, but he's batting number two in the order. He's batting behind Charlie Blackman, who's seeing a whole lot of pitches. I mean, Blackman just came off of an injury, and I think Blackman makes Story better because he's running up pitch counts, and Story is getting to see everything the pitcher has before he steps into the box. And Carlos Gonzalez, who's hitting that 330 range, is batting behind him. As Walt Weiss said in spring training, it's the most protected spot in the order, so why take a rookie out of that spot and put him in a place where maybe he doesn't have as much protection? As long as he has those guys surrounding him, he's going to get pitches to hit because people simply don't want to walk him and have to face Carlos Gonzalez. So what's happening is here's a guy who I think knows himself a little bit better than most players at that stage of their career, and also pitchers have to pitch to him.
I guess let's talk, first of all, let's talk injury stuff. So Gene Segura has been out 3 games in a row. He injured his hip flexor recently, and now we're just kind of waiting to see when he's going to return. Do you think this is going to be something long-term?
From what I understand, it's not something that's long-term. It's just something they've been really cautious about because they don't want him to have a setback this early in the season and cause him to end up having something more serious that would cause him to miss more time. So certainly they want to be cautious in that regard. But they miss him certainly in the lineup because he was a catalyst for them at the top of the order, not just was he hitting well, but, I mean, just the kind of energy that he brings and the aggressiveness on the bases is something that they certainly miss in his absence.
Yeah, you can't rush these things either with anybody, but especially a guy who relies on his speed and who the team relies on his speed. So when you hear hip flexor, it's not like a red flag, like when you hear elbow with a pitcher, but it's still something that you have to be extra precautious with, because coming back too soon just means probably more time out, right?
Yeah, because if you know, if it's a minor thing and you end up not giving it enough time to fully heal, and then you go out there and the way he plays, it's just so full out the way he runs the bases and whatnot. So, you'd risk then actually having a serious injury that could keep you out for multiple weeks or months or whatever it might be, and that's just something that they don't feel is worth the risk at this point.
So let's talk a little bit about Shelby Miller. We've talked about him in the past. I'm going to talk about him again. Some of these people are making my preseason predictions look really silly, and I think the only thing I might have right by the time this thing is over is that the Cubs are going to win the World Series. I thought Shelby Miller was going to have a great year, and he still may have a really good year, but it's not going well for him. So he's got his next start coming up versus his old team, which could be good for two reasons. One, because he might have a little extra oomph in his step wanting to beat them, and two, the Braves are terrible. So this might be just what he needs to get back on track. But what is going on with Shelby Miller?
Well, that's a great question. It's something the Diamondbacks are trying to figure out as well. It just seems to be one inning kind of gets him. His last couple starts, it's been one inning. He just can't seem to stop the damage. His mechanics were off there for a little while, and he was scraped his hand on the pitching mound. And so I think there's a lot going on there. Probably some of it is a little bit mental, I would imagine. Given, coming to a new team, you're trying to make a good impression. They gave up a lot to get you. And then the team's off to kind of a slower start than expected, and you're kind of struggling. I just think it all kind of compounds. And they're hoping that when he does make the start against the Braves, that just the comfort of being back somewhere where he's been before and a mound he's pitched off of before and had success, and not to mention the Braves have struggled offensively, that all that stuff will come together and he can have a good outing and maybe – use that as a springboard, because as you've seen over the years, a lot of times it can be just that one start that helps turn things around for you, where all of a sudden you start pitching with more confidence and belief, and that can change everything for a guy.
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of baffling. I mean, I get that the ball carries better at Chase Field, like it's better for hitters there, not as wonderful for pitchers, but it's just when you think about the year that Shelby had last year, like literally going out there every game knowing that not only was he not going to get any run support, but he was probably going to take the loss. And I don't care what any front office says about losses, wins and losses not meaning anything. And I get that, like when it comes to evaluating pitchers, you don't use their win-loss record to evaluate them. But these wins and losses mean something to the pitchers. And to see those losses pile up on their record is not a pretty sight. So my point being that with all of that, Shelby Miller like pitched fantastically and got kicked in the face over and over again. And so it just is mind-boggling that now he's got, a much better team, a lot of run support. Isn't it just kind of strange that it's just totally flipped?
It really is, and that's why they're having trouble coming up with a solution for it, because it is so strange and doesn't really make sense. And it's not like his stuff is necessarily down and maybe they have the mechanical stuff worked out now. So I think that's kind of where the confusion is what you said. He had so much success last year that, for him to be struggling now just doesn't seem to make sense. And there's no real one thing to kind of put your finger on. So they're trying a whole bunch of different things. And I guess we'll see here coming up on Saturday again, if any of that stuff takes.
Yeah, we can't just dump on Shelby Miller because the starting pitching, I guess if you're going to correct me if I'm wrong, this is just me kind of scanning over box scores and stats and things. It seems like the biggest problem is the starting pitching. They're 500, I think. And we're still very early in the season, but if you had a pinpoint, something out of the offense looks decent. The bullpen has been pretty good. It had a little hiccup a few days ago, but it seems like the starting pitching is the one area that needs to be improved.
Well, and I think that it's possible that all those, the hiccups in the bullpen, the times the bullpen has struggled, as well as sometimes that the offense hasn't scored, can be can all be pointed back to the starting pitching. And, they haven't pitched deep into games, which really taxes the bullpen and has guys pitch more innings than you'd like to have them pitch. And they're not as effective. And that's what they saw happen last year. And that's why it was so important for them to get Zach Greinke and Shelby Miller, because then they figured, They would have two guys along with Patrick Corbin who would pitch deep into games all the time. And obviously with Greinke off to an okay start, but not a Zach Greinke-like start, that has put a little bit more pressure. And then with Shelby going short in games, that's been putting more pressure on the bullpen. And so it's kind of a compounding effect in that way. So I think if they could get the starting pitching figured out, if they could get Greinke and Miller and Corbin to start pitching deeper in the games and giving the bullpen more rest, and then the offense can be hurt too when your pitchers are having long innings and you're standing out there on defense a lot, and it can take a toll on the hitters before they even get up back up to the plate.